everyone, and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. Your host for today's podcast is me, Lisa Rowland, Event Manager here at Charity Digital. Before we get into today's podcast, I have some exciting news. We're going to start taking your questions on future podcast topics through our Twitter account, and we'd love to hear from you. Follow us and get involved. Our Twitter handle is at charitydigiorg. That's at charitydigiorg. Okay, let's get into this. Today we've got together to discuss a subject which is at the forefront of most people's minds at the moment, the cost of living crisis. This crisis has been sweeping the UK since the later end of 2021, and everyday essentials like energy and food is rising much faster than average incomes. The cost of living will have a huge impact on charity employees, volunteers, service users, potential donors, and day-to-day operations of the charities themselves. It is vastly important that charities learn about the crisis, understand some of the potential issues that may arise, arm themselves with knowledge, and protect themselves against the risks. In this podcast, we'll discuss what's meant by the term cost of living crisis and give heaps of advice to help charities weather the storm ahead. Today, I'll be joined by Nick Wyatt, Charity Digital Growth Marketing Executive, Laura Stanley, Content Writer, and Lisa Schumet, Business Development Manager, to discuss the crisis, consider the response from the sector, and explore advice that can support charities. So, hello, everyone.
Hello.
All right, so let's get into this. So, I think the first things first, let's start off with a definition. So, Laura, can you tell us what do we mean by a cost of living crisis?
Well, fortunately, I've done some research into the matter. the think tank Institute for Government defines the cost of living. That's very, the Merriam-Webster dictionary defines the cost of living, isn't it? As I've just said. Anyway, it defines the cost of living as the cost of living is a fall in real disposable incomes adjusted for inflation and after tax and benefits. And the UK has experienced it since late 2021. So it's basically our inflation at the moment is calculated as the average price of typical goods and services purchased by the UK households over the last 12 months. That's tracked by using the consumer price index. So it's basically the increased price of anything over time. The Bank of England aims to keep inflation at between 1% and 3% and adjust interest rates to achieve this, but it currently expects inflation to reach 13% and it's at 10% now. And So what that means, inflation is outpacing wages. So that's where the crisis comes in. So average wages, not including bonuses, rose by 4.7% up to June 2022. And when you take inflation into account, the real value of that pay actually fell by 3%. Compared to 12 months ago.
Okay, so now we know a little bit more about the definition of cost of living crisis, and you said about inflation rates, but what else is causing the struggle at the moment within the industry?
So I guess from what many of our listeners will have read or heard on TV, I think we can say that the most worrying is the increase in prices for the energy, so gas and electricity and water in smaller amount, but mainly gas and electricity. Fortunately, at the moment, we don't need that much gas, and except for cooking, but with the winter, autumn and winter coming up, there's a big worry because Ofgem, so the official bureau or office for the regulation of gas prices has decided to raise the cap again, and will do that quarterly instead of once or twice a year that they used to do in the past. So most people are unfortunately expecting to see their energy bill increase vastly over the next few months, sometimes by hundreds of pounds. That's extremely worrying because you can't really avoid that when it's really cold outside. Mm. You need heating. So that's an additional worry, I'd say, on top of, as you said, Laura, loads of essential food. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about champagne and caviar, but essential food like pasta, etc.
The price of milk has risen 34% according to the BBC. Mm. Milk.
Wow.
And then flour was the next highest. It's like, it's all stuff that you, basics. Like, yeah. You know, even if you decide you want to make your own bread to save a bit of money, like, you can't.
Yeah. Well, everyone saw the pictures of Lurpak costing like £7 for a big tub.
They're putting tags on things in the supermarket, like essential, yeah. Like, to stop people stealing them. It's mad. Mm-hmm. It's mad.
Yeah, no, I think one of the key things to add to the cost of living crisis is that it really is a perfect storm of a lot of terrible things happening all at the same time. Obviously, we just came out of COVID and the government spent a lot of money supporting the country through that time. Things like the furlough scheme and such. So the country's in a massive amount of national debt. That's also not going to help inflation at all. Then on top of that, we are probably all quite aware of the Ukraine conflict, which means that gas prices and petrol prices have been going up. That being said, the UK actually has between 3-10% of its petrol does come from Russia, which should go against that for our own country. However, it does mean that the price of getting gas to us has gone up considerably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's because of a lot of different things, which could take a long time to go through. But a big part of it is obviously the cost of getting the things here because of Brexit and the supply chain. Everything along that chain has increased in price, which means by the time basically anything gets to our door, the price of getting it here is astronomically risen, which is why everything on top of that, mm-hmm. like imported into the country, is costing far more. Then on top of that, you know, as I kind of alluded to, we have Brexit, which is causing a lot of different issues at the moment, whether that be from the increase in income, imports and how much they cost. Same with exports, but also we're having a staffing issue at the moment, which is, mm-hmm. once again, businesses are struggling to find people. And if they're struggling to find people, they tend to offer higher wages, even if they can't afford it, because mm-hmm. they need those staff in. Mm-hmm. It's another thing that's increasing inflation. And then, yeah, as I mentioned, it's a lot of not very good things happening at the same time.
Perfect storm, but imperfect storm.
Yeah.
A horrible storm.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were some great points there. And I think thinking about charities specifically now, what do we think their major concerns will be over the next kind of 12 months during this cost of living crisis?
Yeah, and well, I can jump in because I had a look at several surveys that were done in the sector, and basically overwhelming majority of charitable organizations that were surveyed were worrying about the effect of the cost of living increase on their beneficiaries, on the people that will use the service. So I think it was a survey from that I read in civil society, I think. Over 70% of charity bosses have expressed concern over managing increased demand for the services. Mm-hmm. And most worryingly, more than half are concerned that people will not continue to or begin to donate to their cause because of the cost of living crisis. Probably one of the first thing that comes to mind, and me being volunteering at the food bank in the past, is the increased pressure on food banks. And there's also something quite interesting is with all these talks about cost of living crisis, we see that lower income household are even more badly affected because they spend more, a higher proportion of their income on food and energy, which means that when, you know, these prices increase, the lower and middle and lower middle income households are even more adversely affected. So there's certainly going to be an increase on demand for many, many charities. And we know that food banks are usually quite small, micro charities. So they're going to even feel more of a pressure, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. It's also about how you talk to your traditional supporters about money at a time like this. So it was something that I remember staff of the Armed Forces charity was talking about during COVID. They said that they weren't sure how they could ask people for money when there was a pandemic going on, and this was in March when no one really knew what was happening with it and how it would all turn out. So I think it's something that charities are a little bit used to probably because of COVID. But yeah, how do you ask people for money when it's hard, like one by? And then it says Enthused did a survey that said 55% of people say their financial position makes it hard to donate, and that's before energy prices go up this winter and things like that. So I think it's just quite difficult really for people to know where to be. You don't want to hassle your
supporters,
but you desperately need the money to fund your services.
That's what I think one of the major concerns will be, is kind of managing expectations around what charities are actually going to be able to offer, and kind of is it a case of kind of prioritizing one service over the other to be able to offer that at the same kind of level that they offer it now, so kind of spreading yourself too thin. But I think expectation management is going to be a major thing for charities over the next 12 months or so.
I think another major concern that people sometimes forget is that obviously this is going to affect the people who work at charities as well. So managing your staff and taking care of them for what is going to be a very difficult time is also going to, you know, those increases on bills is going to affect the charity, and it's going to affect the people who work there as well. And managing that within your team to sort of take care of them, to make sure that they are either financially or mentally supported through these tough times, is going to be a massive issue for a lot of charities, I think. Because it's going to be a really tough time if financially, as they've mentioned, hitting lots of charities where they're going to have less money in the bank, when actually a lot of their staff are going to want and need more money too. It's going to be a really fine line to balance everything of these out. It's going to be, the challenge is really, how do you support everyone around you, your your users, as well as your staff, as well as the organization itself? Is it's going to be a balancing game.
Charities
will have to deal with the cost of giving crisis. And I was actually reading something about that Pro Bono Economics calculated that they estimated that £20 donation in 2021 would be actually worth £17.60 in 2024, which is literally 2 years away. So when you forecast as a charity CEO or CFO, or even for your own budget as a manager in any charity, you also need to keep that into consideration, like how are you making sure that you plan as far as possible, as much as possible, in order to see that drop in real value of the donation that anybody gives to your cause.
So quite a few major concerns there. So let's now give our listeners some tips on how to manage this cost of living crisis. So Laura, what advice would you give?
On a personal level or for charities?
For charities, yeah.
What the podcast is about, not me giving my budget expertise, which is bad. I think the supporter journey is going to be more important than ever. So you need to be clear about impact and why you're asking for money. You need to make sure you don't do it too often. Regular givers, I think you can get in touch more because they're clearly still able to help you, but also you need to make sure you thank them, because I think it's going to be more important than ever. Again, that's another great opportunity to share your impact as well, to be like, look, this is what you've helped deliver in this time, and it'll encourage more people to do so, if to donate if they are able to do so. But yeah, I think I just think supporter journey is going to be, it's going to be one of those things that the charity sector knows it's important now, but I think it'll be so much more important during this.
Yeah, definitely front of mind. So yeah, I found a few suggestions, but it was mainly like you were saying, Laura, regularly engaging with your supporters, whether that's on social media or by email, maybe sending a couple of surveys to know how they feel, and to understand what they'd like you to do or to share in terms of resources, whether that's the resource that you produce or that you find on the internet and share with them. I was also quite intrigued that some suggestions, that's for the smaller charities, maybe exploring, you know, what would merging with other similar charities would mean in terms of, you know, having access to a bigger pot of money, bigger pot of donation, or even more funding. You know, how about mutualizing your service delivery? And obviously that's probably the last resort, but it wouldn't, organizations shouldn't shy away from it, because ultimately if you're, better at several organizations at looking after one cause, then why not exploring that? And that can relieve a little bit of pressure, I guess. Mainly, keeping the communication with your supporters and really showing empathy, connecting your cause to it and showing a lot of empathy and understanding that, if you know, the situation requires you to pause your direct debit as a donor, then that's absolutely fine. You know, just let us know so we can plan, and then let us know when we should gain contact with you again, you know, in 6 month time to start the direct debit, for instance. Sort of thing.
I also think it's really interesting what you were saying, Lisa, about managing expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think that charities, as well as merging, they should also, if you need to get in touch with other charities in your sector, start lobbying and be honest about what your constraints are. Like, because I think there's a lot of sectors that are under constraints from government who need government help. And if you're not getting that, then it's a case of a good example is probably what's happening with the strikes at the moment, the rail strikes. I think it's hard to disagree with the strikers when they're so clear about what's happening and why they're doing it. And if you can't support, you don't have the resources to support people in the way that you would like to, in the way that people expect to, because charity is, you know, it's the second most trusted thing, I think, in the UK sector. So I think just be open about that and lobby as much as you can, and find the relevant people who care about your cause to lobby for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And as well as kind of speaking to other charities and working together, but going out to other businesses around your local area asking for help as well, asking for what you need, you know, whether that's help with printing costs or equipment, because people are feeling, you know, feeling this at the moment, and people are willing to help as well. Go and ask some people that maybe you haven't spoken to in a while or you haven't spoken to before. And I think that comes down to your donors as well. Ask them for what you need, whether if that's cash or whether that's actual, you know, volunteers or support in other ways, such as, you know, from an events background, donations for raffles and stuff, which you can then raffle off and raise some money from that. So yeah, I would be really clear in what you need and actually just be quite forward with your asking as well in the next kind of 12 months or so.
Yeah, I guess following on from that, I guess if you're not finding the money where you usually do or would normally do from your donors, you're going to probably have to look into diversifying your donations income, looking into different areas that you haven't before, because things are going to get tricky. So you're going to have to try and look into new areas to start fundraising on. So looking at things like legacy giving, maybe tapping into new audiences. It could be a younger audience who potentially might not be affected as much by the cost of living in some ways. But also really taking the time to, I think, look at all of your options and track them as much as possible. We know we've discussed how much things are probably going to change in the next 2 years. And I think also taking the time to literally look at everything you're doing constantly and how it's fluctuating is going to be so important, because you can't rely on one stream of income or however you do things at one given point, because it could change in 3 months' time. We've discussed how things are going to change massively by the winter. So being on top of things and where your donations are coming from at all times is going to be so important now, especially if you want to diversify your income streams.
Yeah, completely.
And I think look at where you can save. Look at what you're currently doing.
Digital is so important as well.
And that will help. There's also, I mean, gift aid. Like, it's, you know, I've read that there's more than £500 million every year that is not claimed by charities in gift aid. So you definitely need, you dear listeners, as you know, charity professionals need to have a clear, probably, plan around, you know, gift aid. So how do you communicate with your donors around gift aid, the power of gift aid? Because, you know, for every pound raised, there's another 25% that your charity can get. So there's definitely loads of you know, routes to explore around gift aid. And I was also reading, that's the sort of silver lining to all of that, that very wealthy donors dramatically increase their rates of larger donations. So if you want to explore philanthropy and what it means for your organization, you know, it will also be good to look at, you know, wealthy donors or, you know, big corporations that have, you know, perhaps wealthy employees. Because unfortunately, we see a widening gap between the, you know, the lower income household and the higher earning household. And, you know, it might be interesting to explore these this category and obviously see how engaged you can get them to be with your cause.
We had a really interesting session on that on Digital Fundraising Day last year with the Charities Aid Foundation. They talked about how you can approach people with like in your area that might have more money or local businesses and people that are interested and make sure you know what they want from you, like what they want to know. Like, so if they're local, they probably want a charity that's delivering local impact. I think you can find it in the recap article on our website, guys. So look into that because it was a really interesting session. And I think that's to optimize your approach, really, make sure that you're being hyper strategic with it all, I think. There are lots of grant funds out there as well. I think people are willing to help you. And again, as Lisa was saying, with the cost of living, it's well documented. So people are aware that there's a crisis. So, you know, people do pull together, I think, for the most part.
I mean, to look at this from an internal perspective again, the idea of your staff and such, which I think is a really important thing we need to talk about, is that it's a really important thing to really be investing in your staff now. And I know that it doesn't always mean financially because of the difficulties of everybody's going to face soon, but really taking the time to see if there's opportunities elsewhere to invest into your staff, whether that be training or other reasons to really keep them at your organization. I know there was a survey, and I'll try and include it in the resources afterwards, that something like 75% of people in London earlier this year were looking for a new job. So that really tells you the fact that you could lose your best staff very quickly if you're not investing time into people. I think a lot of people look at this time as a time to get rid of staff when actually the job market is booming. There's so many out there despite everything that's going on at the moment. There's lots of people looking for work. So there are lots of opportunities for people. So really making sure you're keeping your best staff in-house and taking care of them is really important. So really assess where you really need to invest the time, those people you need to support. Also on another level, just a case of just making sure that mentally and that all your staff are well cared for, because this is going to be a really tricky time for everybody. It's going to be very difficult for them. So making sure that you're checking in on people and making sure that they're as happy as they can be and just generally okay, it would be really important. And that's a great way to invest in those people, I think, too.
So I completely agree with that. And I think almost take everybody kind of case by case basis, because obviously everybody manages money differently and has different outgoings, and kind of one thing that works for somebody might not work for somebody else. And as Nick said, there might not be a possibility of kind of pay rises or anything to help with the cost of living, but things like allowing people to work from home a little more so that they can save on their commute costs and stuff like that can really help in a time like this.
And open those channels so it's easy for your employees to come and talk. I'm volunteering to come and talk to you about these things. And if there is, you know, so maybe there might not be the chance for a pay review, but it's also quite stressful to not know how you can ask for one. And so I think make it clear that this is the process for asking for one. It might not happen, but also this is the process for telling us you're struggling. I think those situations can be so stressful and a big weight off the shoulders if you know how to do it in the first place. Because then it's not stressful being like organizing that awkward meeting. So I think just be really open and make sure the support is readily available, I think.
Yeah, I guess one last thing to touch on. We've spoke about fundraising, but I think in terms of marketing as well, it provides a lot of opportunities. It's not a great word to use for it, but of how people can start driving things forward, because you're going to need a brand new message as the world shifts again. So I think one of the ways you're going to have to manage this crisis is really taking a step back and thinking how you're going to market exactly what you're trying to do with your organization and really come up with a new way that you can push out your campaigns, let them, you know, centering on the problems that people are facing elsewhere while other people are already facing their own problems as well, because sometimes people do, you know, they forget about others when they've got their own problems. So taking the time to really work out how you can reach people and show them that, you know, others are probably struggling more than yourself is a challenge that people need to address to really deal with what's coming up.
I think it's like something that charities have learned during COVID. You've been through this, you've been through times of uncertainty. And that was a real time for innovation in the charity sector. Yeah. And we showed how much like people can do with limited resources and having to move everyone home for a period of time. Like, it's really difficult. And then I'm just thinking about like challenge events became a really big thing for me, and how we moved those home and community fundraising and all this sort of stuff. So I just think that, take those lessons on board and, charity sector is a pretty agile place. I think
that's
it's just definitely what Nick said, just being flexible and thinking of new ways.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, some great tips there, everyone. Thank you. So we've spoken about charities, but do we have any advice for the individuals listening to the podcast where kind of a pay rise may not be possible this year, but they can make some savings elsewhere in their lives? Lisa?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. I had a look at plenty of very interesting pages, which I think we can probably share with our wider audience. Definitely, we're talking to charity workers, and there is a website called Charity Workers Discount.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, you can join for free. That's the most important. And you can access hundreds of discounts for everyday shopping, fashion, mobile, car insurance, etc. So it's really good. There's obviously the Money Saving Expert. I think they have at least three different articles on the subject. I'm personally very much of a foodie. So the couple of food tips. There's the Olio and Too Good To Go app so that you can get heavily discounted food that's, you know, that's about to expire, basically, from local restaurants and shops and cafes. So it's definitely worth checking it out. And then if you are able to, if you have enough space, always look at buying dry items in bulk, like pasta, rice, flour, and stack them in glass jars that you can get from a bargain shop or Poundland, really. More importantly, name them and date them. So you know, like opening your cupboard and wondering how long is these, you know, have these pasta been there? But I think a great way to save money and saving trips to the supermarket as well. If you are able to stock and buy in bulk all the dry items, that's definitely a good tip.
Have you ever been on Chapman Road? They're a campaigner and they have them some really good recipes on there. And it's like a Venn diagram of really good food, but really cheap. And I'm very, I'm very impressed.
And they also are compiling a price index. I think I read an article, sort of Tribune, that they wrote about inflation and the fact that with, you know, their website, they were able to track more of the actual essential food items price over a certain period of time. So it's worth checking them out.
Yeah, brilliant.
Kind of following on, Lisa, from what you said about charity discount site, I whenever I buy anything online, I always Google for a discount code first.
Yes.
Even if you know, it doesn't work, give it a go. For sometimes on some of the major websites, you can get kind of 20% off, which is quite a big saving over if you use that website quite a lot. I think the other thing I advocate for are loyalty cards. Collect up your points, whether that's supermarkets or, you know, cosmetics or wherever you shop. Check if they've got a loyalty scheme, because if they do, it's well worth having it. And it's all the ones I have are free to sign up to. I don't ever pay for loyalty cards. It's well worth it. So yeah, I would definitely recommend that.
I would start by tracking what's going on, because I think in a cashless society, it's very easy for me to tap my card and be like, why have you spent that much money on something else? So I think I don't want to say like cut out, I feel like some articles are always like, cut out things you love, like Netflix. I'm like, that Netflix isn't my biggest expense, to be honest. It's not me. And also, I deserve a life. Optimize my spending, so I don't need to have lunch every time. I'm terrible for doing it, but like I should cook at home and make stuff just like that. But my housemate is really frugal, and she recently changed our broadband provider because our other one was much too expensive. So she shopped around, and it honestly wasn't stressful at all. I don't even know, but I think she did it on holiday. Switched before we knew it, and there was no handover, really. That was good. And then she also bulk buys loo rolls on eBay. We've had a delivery of hundreds of loo rolls, and it lasts you ages, but it's not only cheaper, but you also do never run out. that's my two tips.
Going to what you just said, not about the loo roll, but the switch is something that's really important, is that, you know, as we move into this period, if your contract with whatever energy, anything you have is coming to an end, check switch, because so many companies are going to take advantage of this period
and put up their prices drastically more than they actually need to, because you're not moving from one provider to the next. It's only until you start threatening, actually, I'm going to be a provider, will they actually start giving you a better deal than it's on the table. So really check out the market. I'm talking everything here. I'm talking gas, electric, car insurance. They always do the same thing. They'll offer you a deal because they know that you're not going to, they're hoping that you don't come back to them and say, actually, I could get much better elsewhere. And you can almost start haggling with your providers. Even in a difficult time like now, you will probably be able to get elsewhere for a little bit cheaper with those raises. So really check out the market if you've got your contracts coming up. With discounts online, you can get plugins for your browser, which just do that for you. So I think Klarna do it.
Well, that's good.
I think a few others that do it, and they literally just will immediately tell you what's the deal that they found on the internet. And a shameless plug, but if you're looking to get some software, there's a thing called a charity digital exchange.
Budgeting, one thing that I find quite helpful is like using Smart Shop in your supermarket, because you can see how much you're spending as you go, because you're scanning the items as you go. So if you do have a limit of £20 for your shop or something like that, once you're getting close to that, you know when you need to stop, or can you afford to put those biscuits in there? I always can afford to.
It's an essential, isn't it, really?
But yeah, just being a bit more savvy. And I know, for example, Sainsbury's, if you use Smart Shop, you get extra discounts and stuff like that. So just, make sure you're having a look around at the different things that you can do.
Yeah. And also for the people, listening to us and dealing with, serving vulnerable people, it's always good to recommend them to have a chat with, for instance, Citizen Advice, or give them a call or check their website, because there's a lot of grants and schemes that can enable them to pay less on the energy bill. There's also a broadband social tariff. So if you're on certain benefit, the likes of BT Sky can offer you a much lower rate. So they are definitely, when we're talking about this, so essential bills like energy and somewhat broadband, I think it's almost like an essential. There are definitely ways to pay less, whether by switching or by actually being eligible for a cheaper rate.
This is something that charities can also think about putting on their websites, right? Macmillan have a dedicated webpage for their beneficiaries that are struggling with financial guides and all that stuff that you mentioned, like government support. And they also have a support line for people who might need that help. So I think of it for you, but also think about it for your beneficiaries and whether people would need to find that information on your site.
Yeah.
And check your staff benefits as well. A lot of those companies now do have a staff assistance program, so which can offer financial support, loads of different kinds of support. So check that out and see if you've got access to something like that as well.
Definitely. And then carpooling, really, for whether your staff or your volunteers, because we know that fuel costs has just skyrocketed. So just getting people to talk to one another and maybe discover that they're actually don't live far from one another. So we do quite a lot of that in France, where I'm usually from, originally from. But so that's also, and definitely a way for obviously as a charity, have maybe a specific page or a specific channel for your staff to just chat and arrange that sort of carpooling initiative, or volunteers, obviously. And then if you're an individual and you still feel like you want to make a difference, maybe look at ways to volunteers, maybe online, where you don't have to obviously travel and spend money on the fare, or very, very local charities where you can support whichever way you can. If it's not money, then it can be definitely time or skills, and loads of charities would be extremely happy to have your support.
Okay, so thank you, Laura, Lisa and Nick, for your contributions today. We hope you found that helpful. So we'll speak to you next time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Can I also say, don't bulk buy loo rolls in a pandemic? I feel like I've actually said
too late.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.